Hello, everyone. Welcome to yet another episode of The Police and the People. We are at episode number 10.
I can't believe we've lasted that long, huh?
10. We did it.
Yeah.
And we can retire, right?
It's a milestone.
Look at all that money we're sitting on.
If it was police work, 10 years, usually you're vested. You
get
a retirement.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's your halfway mark.
Yep.
All right. On today's show, we're going to be covering... Well, we're actually going to finish up the Peelian principles. We've been going through the 9 Sir Robert Peel principles, and today we're going to hit 7, 8, and 9 to finish those up. And then we're going to do a leadership nugget. Today we're going to be talking about motivation, what motivates people.
Ass kickings. That's what motivates
boot
people.
Boot in the ass. That's what we're going to talk about.
I'm just kidding. That's not.
That is not it. No, that doesn't work. That just makes them angry.
We don't subscribe to that type of. That's a tongue-in-cheek comment for
exactly
for our listeners out there.
But before we get into the podcast, we got to promote our company a little bit. This is Granite State Police Career Counseling, or GSPCC, as we call it. And Josh, why do we do what we do?
Well, I'll call it the yearbook answer, or what is on our website that says we want to enhance the careers of law enforcement and corrections officers everywhere. But that's just what we put on our website. I mean, that just is kind of a paraphrase.
We do want to do that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, what our company does and what makes me proud about what we do is if you take one of our classes, you're not just going to have an instructor up there reading PowerPoint slides. You know, you're not going to have that quote unquote death by PowerPoint. We use PowerPoint.
And we do. There's going to be quite a few.
Yeah. And there's going to be a slide behind the instructor, but our instructors let the class kind of dictate where the conversation goes and where the dialogue goes.
Yes.
And in many cases where the debate goes, because we have some excellent civil debate in our classes.
We do.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to, in the leadership class,
sure,
talking about millennials versus X-gens.
Sure.
And because we're seeing more and more and more millennials,
yep,
in the class now.
When we talk about motivating employees, you'll get 7 or 8 different opinions,
yep,
on what is the number one motivator of employees. And
yep,
the members of the class will say, well, I'm going to disagree with you there. And they'll kind of argue amongst themselves. And what's great about that is as instructors, we kind of guide the discussion.
Right.
So, you know, that's what I'm very proud about with all of our classes, is that it really is focused on the people taking the class, the police officers that are there taking time out of their busy schedules to come and sign up for our courses.
Right.
It's not about us as instructors. It's about them as...
Absolutely. It's about them. Yes. Yeah. And if you're coming to the class just to sit there and get a day out of work and not do anything, you're probably going to be disappointed, because we encourage discussion. We want it. And as Phil White says, if you don't, we're going to put our back against the wall and say, this is where you talk.
Sure.
Because none of us is as smart as all of us, right?
Right.
So what about the how? How do we do what we do?
So we offer very competitive hosting agreements. If your department, whether it be police, corrections, whether it be fire, whether it be probation, parole, if you want to host one of our classes, you will get 3 free spots in the class.
Yep.
And all we ask is that you provide a media-ready room, something that has Wi-Fi and has projection and that kind of stuff, and maybe throw out some light refreshments in the morning. And that's really all you have to do.
And advertise.
And then as far as...
Not paid advertise, but through your outlets.
Right. But as far as what you're going to need to do on those days, that's pretty much it. Now, we're going to ask that you help us promote the class, that you fire off flyers and so on and so forth.
Right.
But it is... I got 2 emails last week from departments that say, we want to start to host your classes.
Mm-hmm.
So that I like that every, every month we're getting 2 or 3 new requests to host, because they see the
value.
Nice.
Because when I first started the company, I was calling them.
Right.
And now they're calling us. So it's very nice to see that.
It's probably because I came on as a
partner.
It is
exactly that. You are the backbone.
Yes.
Yeah. And what do we offer, Josh, to sum it up?
So we offer a lot of different classes. As you mentioned, we had a leadership class up in Wiscasset, Maine last week, which was tremendous. Probably one of our...
Outstanding.
Yeah. Probably top 5 that we've ever had,
yes,
is what I would say.
Yep.
And... we offer interview and interrogation. We offer drug investigations. We offer some crime scene classes.
Juvenile.
We have juvenile law. Yes, that's a very popular one. And coming up At the end of June, we have our field training officer class. Mm-hmm. That's going to be up in Saco, Maine, June 24th, 25th, 26th, and 27th. It's a 4-day class. It's more than half full already. So if some of our listeners are interested in signing up, you're going to want to do that sooner than later. And that's taught by Phil White from the San Jose Police Department. He runs their field training academy. Phil's probably, in my opinion, the guru nationally. I mean, he is absolutely kind of the top dog on field training.
He is, absolutely. And he's a fun instructor.
Yes.
He keeps the class entertained. Not that he's a clown or anything, but he's funny, he's witty,
yep,
and he's very bright. He's just one of those instructors that's very engaging.
Yes.
You're not bored in his class. Yes.
When I think of people that I've taken a class from, and there's a lot of them, mm-hmm, and people that I've taught classes with, and there's a lot of them, Phil is, if he isn't number one, he's, you know, like I said, in that top handful.
I'd put him number one.
Phil is one
after,
of the best instructors.
Right.
Yeah. If he is one of the best instructors that I've come into contact with.
All right, Josh, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm very good.
Still recovering from Wiscasset.
Yeah, you said the Maine beer was a little potent.
Yeah, they didn't tell me that Maine beer can get you hungover.
I had a couple of IPAs that night after I taught. Mm-hmm. I wasn't hungover the next day, though.
I didn't have a lot of them. I had
two.
Yeah. I just had a couple.
So that was in walking distance of the hotel. Well, yeah. So were you, weren't you? Yeah.
But I woke up the next day saying, what happened? But and I had a couple of beers. That was it while I was having dinner.
Gotcha. And just so you know, we are without our engineer. He is taking a final today. It's a pathetic excuse. Pathetic. But he's, yeah.
We are a training.
Here next
we're a training company. We should encourage education, Tim.
That's right. But we just had him on FaceTime to show us how to set everything up. So hopefully I did it right. We'll see. All right. So let's roll right into Sir Robert Peel's Policing Principles 7, 8, and 9. If you want to get the first 6, then you're going to have to go back and listen to some other episodes. I don't know right offhand which numbers those were.
Well, we were doing two per episode.
Yeah.
So the last three episodes.
Last three or so, yes. But check it out. It will say in the show notes that we were covering the Sir Robert Peel principles. Really quick, Sir Robert Peel is considered the father of modern policing. He was the first one to organize an actual metropolitan police department in England. And his model has been around ever since. And he developed these principles that all police departments should adhere to, and it should be the backbone of why they do what they do. And so let's just jump right into number 7. I'm going to read it verbatim. This is the lengthiest one, and then Josh is going to expand on it a little bit. All right, so police at all times should maintain a relationship with the public that gives reality to the historic tradition that the police are the public and the public are the police. I like to substitute people instead of public. The police are the people, and the people are the police. The police being only members of the public who are paid to give full-time attention to duties which are incumbent on every citizen in the interests of community welfare and existence. And that's it. That's one of the more lengthy ones. But what do you think of that one, Josh?
I heard a guy one time say, police are members of the community. You are a member of your community, whether it be the community you live in or the community that you serve.
Right.
So that is why we need to embrace that concept of community policing. We want the people in the community to participate
right
in the policing of their neighborhoods, of their streets, of their homes, of their businesses, so on and so forth.
Yes.
And when you can achieve that, the only difference between the police and the local resident is we're wearing the uniform and we're the one who ultimately
can take action.
Well, yeah, carries things out.
Right.
Look at it this way. Is a teacher the only person that teaches your child? No. When a kid comes home, their parents are teaching them things. It could be in a formal setting through like helping them with homework.
Right.
And it could just be teaching them life's lessons.
Yep.
It should be the same with the police and the people. The police, the people should not look at the police as the only ones who do anything to keep a community safe.
Right.
And the police should recognize that we need the citizens to reach that ultimate level of safety and security.
Absolutely.
And to allow a community to thrive.
Yes. And when you said that, it just made me think that, yeah, the police witness crimes sometimes. You know, certainly the motor vehicle stuff. You know, they're out there enforcing motor vehicle laws. But the other things, a lot of times they don't see them. But you do.
Yeah.
You, the citizens, do. So you're the ones who, you know, should be calling the police. And hopefully you have a trust in your police department that you would call them.
Sure.
And they would come out and then assist you by, you know, going on further with that crime and bringing it to its end. So, yeah, there's that relationship. Yeah. It's a partnership.
Sure.
100%.
Now, just for the record, we're certainly not encouraging people to take action.
Oh, no, no.
Out there. You know, we don't want, if somebody's, you know, robbing a convenience store, we don't want you to try to stop them. We don't want you to chase them afterwards.
Nope.
We, you know, and that is a lot of times folks that have very, very good intentions in their hearts are in the right place. They get themselves or somebody else hurt because they're, you know, they're overstepping. And it, again, it's not intentional. It's not that they are bad people. They're trying to be good neighbors to people.
But it's best to just be a good witness.
Yes, exactly.
That's what we would want most. Yep. The best description you can get, if you can get a plate, things of that nature, things that can help us track the person would be very helpful. We don't want any of you getting hurt.
Yeah, but that really is what the principle is all about, is there is just a very, very fine line between the police and the people.
Yes.
We are a part of the community, and the people are such a huge part of law enforcement in their neighborhoods.
Yeah.
In their societies. They don't even realize it.
I have a good friend who's a lieutenant in a very, very small department here in New Hampshire. And he lives in that community. And he was telling me that he gets people stopping by his house. He has that kind of relationship with them. And he does not mind it, he said. You know, he doesn't like it if they were to come at weird hours and things of that nature, but he didn't say that was a problem. But he has developed that relationship with his community, and they love him there.
Yep. There is a department in New Hampshire, a seaside community, where I believe the chief of police has a house that the town owns that's on like a community park right on the water.
Wow.
So the chief gets a waterfront home, but there's complete access to the chief, you know, 24/7 because it's right in a public common area.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of built into his or her, they probably, I don't know what they pay that person, but pay them less because they get this beautiful home to live in
for you're not paying
X amount of years.
Yeah.
And you get to live on the water.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. All right. Moving on to principle number 8. Police should always direct their action strictly towards their functions and never appear to usurp the powers of the judiciary.
Yeah, that's when you put it into plain English, it basically says, don't use your badge to get freebies, right? It says, don't use your badge. If you get in trouble, if you get pulled over and you're going to get a speeding ticket, take your speeding ticket, you know, take it like a man, right?
Yeah.
You shouldn't be trying to get free meals with your badge. You shouldn't be using your badge to commit crimes or to engage in criminal activity. You shouldn't be saying, well, I have a badge, so that somehow makes me different. And unfortunately, there's been a lot of departments over the years that didn't embrace that sentiment.
Yeah.
They used their badge to basically become criminals with badges and guns. We know that, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately, that has happened. Now, I just want to introduce a little bit of reality. This is about the police and the people, and you know, people deserve to know that many police officers do extend professional courtesies to other police officers.
But you shouldn't be looking for it.
No, you don't look for it, and it is within reason. We're talking minor stuff. Not certainly, you know, they're not going to DWIs, you know, or assaults, things of that nature. They are not going to turn a blind eye to that. And if they do, they should be jailed as well. That's my opinion.
Yeah. What I would tell you is that the same professional courtesy that a police officer extends to another police officer, it's probably that same professional courtesy that they extend to the average citizen many times. You know, you pull that person over and you ultimately determine this is a good, law-abiding, tax-paying person that made a bad choice here, you know, ran a stop sign, was speeding, whatever they were doing, right, mm-hmm. talking on their cell phone. And after having a conversation with them, you say, they're probably not going to do this again, and I don't need to write them a ticket. Right. It's the same mindset.
Change behavior.
Yes, and it's the same mindset when you give professional courtesy to a police officer. You pull somebody over. It turns out they're a police officer. Maybe you know them or you know, somehow there's a connection and you end up having a quick conversation. And a lot of times it ends with, can you do me the favor and slow down? Can you do me the favor and put the phone away, whatever mm-hmm. it is. And that's been my experience.
Yeah. I got a question for you. Back in your patrol days, what do you think your ratio was with respects to warnings and tickets?
Quite a bit more warnings than tickets.
Yeah.
That was me.
I was I wasn't extremely aggressive with motor vehicle, but I wasn't the type of person who wanted to just sit and wait for things to happen. So I went out and I enforced motor vehicle law. So I'd probably stop, depending on the amount of call volume, between, I don't know, 8 to 12 cars per shift, right?
You pulled over 8 to 12 per shift?
Yeah, maybe more. I don't know. But again, where I worked, we had a pretty good amount of call volume. So, mm-hmm. you know, I had to go to calls, but, you know, between all of that. And then you're also doing follow-ups and such. But I would say my ratio was probably 4 to 1, if I could just estimate it, 4 warnings to 1 summons.
And I believe that's a national
suggestion. I think it is.
Is you should, if you're pulling over 5 cars, you should be writing about 1 ticket is what that would be a suggested practice nationally.
Right.
Now, I will tell you my first, remember, I became a detective at 28. I was not in patrol very long. And 2 of those years, I was on a mountain bike for quite a bit of it. So, right. you know, nobody wants to get a ticket written by a guy in shorts and a polo shirt.
But I've done it.
Yeah, oh, sure. But, you know, you kind of come off like a weenie when you're pulling a car over in shorts.
Well, and you're out of breath.
You had to chase the car until the next stoplight.
Exactly.
So that you could, you know.
Pull over.
Yeah. Well, and then when you ask them to roll the window down and you say, pull the car, they honestly look at you like, are you serious?
Yeah.
And then it takes them a second. Like, are you a cop? Really?
Yeah.
Because they just, you know.
Right.
And I was a young guy back then, so I think they probably thought I was a little kid playing games with them.
Maybe.
You know.
Maybe.
It would take a second. So.
Yeah. Yeah. They would eventually, though.
Yeah. So I just never wrote a lot of tickets in my career.
It's I don't think most officers do. There are a few tackleberries out there that, you know, they're just black and white. You broke the law, you get a ticket. But I can tell you, I worked with a few of those guys. And here's what would usually happen. They were always in court, and they typically either lost a lot of cases, and the judges kind of got tired of them.
Yeah.
The judges got tired of seeing them because it's like, really?
Yeah.
You're writing a ticket for this?
Yeah.
Again?
I always say, saving the world, one speeding ticket at a time, right?
So. Because the judges don't have time for that.
Sure.
All right, moving on to number 9. The test of police efficiency is the absence of crime and disorder, not the visible evidence of police action in dealing with it.
Yeah, so that's a tough one to gauge because there's not a tangible thing you can grab onto, right? When you start saying, well, we have no crime in our community, so our police must be doing a great job. They probably are.
But
it might also be that you live in a community that just doesn't have a lot of criminal activity.
Right.
Maybe the police are doing a good job of discouraging that criminal activity from moving into your community.
Which is a beautiful thing.
Sure.
But there is another double-edged sword here with respect to police and their budget and their number of officers in that they have to show that they're doing something, stats. And if a crime does not occur, that's not a stat.
Yep.
So,
and that's the difficult. That's why I say it's a very, very it's a tough target to hit because it's a moving target at that point.
It is.
And then the question becomes, well, do you need all the police that you have? Do you need all the equipment that you have? Do we need to pay our police officers as much as we pay?
Exactly.
Because their job is quote unquote easy.
Yeah. We don't have crime here. So sure. Let's lay off some.
But something that you and I have been talking about from our very first episode, are you looking for a police department? Or as a taxpayer, are you looking for the police service? Because police do a lot of things other than arrest people.
Yep.
They do a lot of things other than write tickets. And they're not just all, you know, high-fiving kids at the crosswalks and, you know, helping old ladies across the street. They are providing safety tips for you and other members of your community from a proactive standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Things like internet safety, things like drug safety, you know, we just had drug take back last 2 weeks ago.
Right. And a lot of departments are actually doing 24/7 drug take backs.
Yes, my department does.
Yeah, mine did too, special containers. And, yep. And there's a lot that goes into that. A lot of people don't realize the amount of a policy and protocol that you have to have in place in order to make that happen.
But so, what a tremendous resource to be able to offer your community for them to be able to get rid of their unneeded prescription drugs mm-hmm. so they don't fall into the wrong hands.
Exactly. You're not flushing it down the toilet and it doesn't fall into, like you said.
Like a kid or somebody that's dealing with a drug addiction. It's just a great safety measure to be able to provide your community.
Yep.
And police do things like that. And they're not arresting anybody. They're not writing anybody any tickets.
Nope.
But they are providing it. Kind of an enforcement service.
Mm-hmm.
They're enforcing the drug laws by collecting all the unnecessary or unneeded drugs, and then they get transported to an incinerator and get destroyed. And like you said, there's a record of that. There's a lot of oversight.
There is a lot of oversight.
Yep. I can tell you my department just handled a drug purge like that. Two officers have to be a part of it, so it isn't just one officer that's handling those.
Mm-hmm.
There are reports that are done.
There has to be a witness and all that.
Right. There are multiple keys that are used to access this, and you document the you-know-what out of it
mm-hmm.
for obvious reasons. But that's a great example of a service that the police provide that doesn't involve that enforcement, that direct enforcement component.
Right. All right. That sums up the Pelion principles. And again, I want to give a big thank you to Jay Sartell for suggesting that we cover these. Jay, I didn't realize this. Jay teaches at pretty much every college in New England. he teaches a class for us, and we recently submitted it for an RFP at the local academy here to try to get some contracts to teach there. And part of that is I have to have his bio and his CV and such and his resume. And I couldn't believe it when I saw it, the amount of colleges where he currently actively teaches.
Yeah.
I don't know when he sleeps. I know. I don't think he does. Have you ever met him?
I've talked to him on the phone, and, you know, whenever I talk to him, I'm dropping my kid off here. I'm doing this. Yeah. Then I'm going here.
Coaches baseball.
Yeah, right. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, I don't think I've ever talked to Jay that he's just like sitting in a chair at his house. No. I think he has a
coffee IV, man, to be honest with you. All right. Again, thank you, Jay. We really appreciate it. All right. Moving on to our leadership nugget of the day.
This is one of my favorites.
Why don't you take this over? Yeah.
Motivation is it's one of my favorite topics and discussions in our leadership class when we get to it.
I agree. Me too.
And I think that students enjoy it. That's where we get a lot of spirited discussion. Probably because it's not the same for everybody. Everybody's motivated a little differently.
Right. Because most people think that motivation is the stick and carrot.
Yes.
You got to dangle something in front of them, and that is not the case. Science has proven that over and over again.
Yeah. You figure with Ed Deasy's work back mm-hmm. in the early 70s. I mean, so we're talking 40 plus, you know, close to 50 years ago now.
Right.
They were already starting to break out of that mindset in public service,
mm-hmm.
even back in the day.
Yes.
Let's get started with our nugget. So we're talking about motivation, and specifically today we're going to talk about what influences motivation. And to make it even more specific, we're going to talk about concepts called autonomy, mastery, and purpose. Now, I'm sure some of our listeners are familiar with this concept and familiar with these terms, but we're going to break them down one by one for you and kind of give you our take and our spin on it.
Right.
So let's start with autonomy. I'll let you go first, Tim.
All right. Autonomy. Everyone knows what it means, right? It's just the concept is that you want to be left alone. Right?
Autonomous.
Yeah, autonomous, right? With respects to motivation, though, and you could you can find this on Dan Pink's TED Talk.
Yeah, Dr. Yeah. Daniel Pink.
Yeah, yeah. He's a very funny guy as well. It's one of the more lengthy TED Talks you'll see out there. I think it's a little over 20 minutes. But he goes into this, and he talks about how autonomy means, with respects to motivation, is that people don't want to be micromanaged. That's kind of what it comes down to. Here's what you got to do as a leader. Teach them how to do their job, and then get the hell out of their way.
Yes.
Let them do it. So that's what it means by autonomy, in that you want to be able to go and do your job and not have someone looking down on you all the time, always bugging you about progress and such, and certainly not be micromanaged.
Well, think about that term. We've all heard it a million times. Give me a fish, I eat today. Mm-hmm. Teach me to fish, I'll eat forever, or yep. whatever. Right. However, you know, there's a million variations of it.
Right.
I always relate that to autonomy. I want you to show me, if you're my leader, if you're my boss, if you're my manager, if you're my coach, mentor, whatever it is, I want you to show me and walk me through the skills I need to have, and then I'm going to take it from there.
Yes, and that's a good segue for the next one, by the way.
Yeah, and as a leader, we want to build more leaders, not more followers.
Right.
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 So let's move on to the next one, though. Mastery.
Yeah.
What do you think, Tim?
Well, it's what you just said. As a leader, teach them how to do it and then get out of their way. Well, that's the mastery part, is the teaching them how to do their job. If you think about it, you're not going to be very motivated to do your job if you don't know how to do it.
Yes.
Or if you're not confident in yourself and your abilities. So, I mean, think about that as a professional basketball player. If you're not confident out there, you're going to be benched pretty quickly, right?
Yep.
So
that was my problem. That's why I
is that what know, it was?
Yes. Yeah. Wasn't being barely 6 feet and
but you could sink those three pointers, right?
Yeah, a little slower than a tortoise. Yes.
Yeah. On a good day.
Yes. That's what I always said in my my career. If you came to see Plymouth State play basketball, I saw the same game right from the bench.
Yeah. Unless it was the 20-20 rule.
Yeah, right? Yes. If we were up 20 or down 20, the coach would put me in.
Yeah. All right. Let's get back on track here.
Yeah,
so mastery is just that. You need to know how to do your job. And if you don't, you're not going to be motivated to do it. Sure. I don't know how further to explain that.
Yeah, and we were talking about this a little before we started the episode. Everybody think back to, when your kids were young, or if you don't have kids, when you've seen, I'm talking a little kid, year old, 2 years old, if they're trying to do something, it could be eat their food, cut their food up, put a toy together, put a puzzle. If their parent or an adult tries to help them, how often do you see that little kid almost throw their hand up at the adult, push the adult away? They always just kind of, they go, yeah, like, leave me alone.
Right.
I can do this.
Yep.
That's it right there. That is, I know how to do this. I've either watched you do
that's
it.
That's the or autonomy. They want autonomy.
They want autonomy, and you have probably provided them with a certain level of mastery.
Correct.
You've shown them how to do it at some point
as
an adult, or they just figured it out watching you.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Like we say, monkeys do it, right?
Monkeys do it.
They watch each other. Monkey see, monkey do.
Yep.
And to me, that is that combination of autonomy and mastery taking place.
That's a great example. Absolutely. What's the last one there?
Purpose.
This is the toughest one to explain, in my opinion, when we do the classes, the leadership classes, because I get it, but I don't know if the class always gets it.
Again, I think it's different for everybody. Everybody's purpose is different. Their intrinsic motivation is different.
Yeah.
So that's always been my take on it.
Yeah. So the purpose here is the why. Why you do what you do. Why you're out there. Why you're a police officer. Why you want to be a supervisor, okay? And what your job is as a leader, if you want to help motivate people, is to remind them of why they're doing what they're doing. I've always thought that burnout occurs because people got bored. And that may be a part of it, but I think it's actually because they lose vision. They lose sight of their why. They don't know why they're doing it anymore.
Yeah. I think they either forget why, or the why just it isn't their why anymore. It's not that important.
Absolutely,
to them.
Yeah. They have a new
why.
Lose it.
They have. Yeah. They might have a different why, and it might not involve their current profession,
their service to the public,
or it right. could be your. It could be your current profession. It could be your relationships in life. It can be anything.
Yeah.
That if your why changes, you will probably lose your motivation too.
Yep.
And you'll focus your motivation on that new why.
Yeah.
That different why.
Exactly.
You know.
So as leaders, you constantly have to remind your people why they do what they do. And I can give you a quick little example. I was teaching a leadership class in the community that I live in New Boston, New Hampshire. And I was at the police department teaching it. And behind me on the wall was a clipboard. And it had some statistics on there. Burglary statistics, to be specific, over I think it was 3 or 4 years. And there was a drop over the years, and then a pretty tremendous drop in the numbers in the last year that was shown there. And the chief put a note on there that said, "Thank you for what you all have done here," to his people. This is I can't remember, you know, verbatim what it said, but this is why we do what we do, you know, to see this kind of result. That's a great example.
Yeah.
You've shown that you've helped protect your community, and that's the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
That's the service to the community. So that's the purpose.
Yep. I had a lieutenant. He was a lieutenant at the time. If you're listening out there, Captain Robert Pease, I think he retired ultimately as a captain. In my final interview before I was released to solo duty as a rookie, mm-hmm. when I was getting out of my field training, he said, "People have a right to feel safe in their homes. That's what we do.
Yeah.
Our job is to help them feel safe in their homes and legitimately, not just smoke and mirrors, to do our jobs to make their community safer. People have a right to feel safe in their homes."
Right.
And that was over 23 years ago that Captain P said that to me. So that has stayed
resonates.
With me, and
yeah.
I say that to people all the time in this career. That to me is the why, and it's important for people not to confuse your what with your why.
Mm-hmm.
They're both important, but they're different things.
They are
so
different.
What you do might be police work. What you do might be going on a walking beat in your mm-hmm. in your department, or
yep.
it might be
motor vehicle enforcement.
Yes, motor vehicle yeah. enforcement. Those are the what's you're doing. Why are you doing it is just as important to keep a community safe, to keep, you know, why do we take back those drugs? To make sure they don't get in the wrong hands. So what are we doing? We're providing that drug drop-off area.
Yep.
Why are we doing it? So they don't contaminate the environment mm-hmm. or get into the hands of somebody that shouldn't have them.
Which is a service to the community.
Right, to keep the community safe.
Yep.
You know,
absolutely.
So that kind of sums up our
it
motivation.
Does. Yeah, right? That's it. So remember, autonomy, mastery, and purpose, AMP, if you want to amp your people up, you can remember that. Just make sure that you don't micromanage them. Make sure they know how to do their jobs via training. And make sure you remind them of why they do what they do. All right. I'm going to close this out. So if anyone out there is or knows someone who's trying to break into the law enforcement profession, We understand. We feel your pain. And I've had quite a bit of experience with the testing process at my former agency, and it led me to actually write a curriculum and then later on write a book. And you can find this book, which is called Law Enforcement Test Preparation Guide. You can buy it off our website. If you go to gs-pcc.com, once you're there, go over to products and resources, scroll down till you see the preparation and study guides, and you're going to see it right there. It's on the left. Again, it's called Law Enforcement Test Preparation Guide. You can also find it on Amazon. And basically, it helps people with the understand the pitfalls, the do's and don'ts, what you should do, what you should absolutely avoid. and helping you be better prepared for a testing process. When people go to these things, or at least when I used to run them, I could always tell who was going to do well because I could tell who was prepared, okay?
And just think of the people that are now going through some of the GSPCC prep programs that we're running and
yes.
are having success. Huge success. We're getting emails all the time from students, young people mm-hmm. who have now utilized either the test guide or have actually taken our seminar, our program, yep. and are saying, hey, I got hired, and it was right on the money,
yes.
the things that I learned.
Yes. The college that that brings us in for their CJ students is seeing a very large spike in the hiring and also people who want to actually really go into that profession because now yep. they're prepared because before they were a little more intimidated by the process. They were CJ majors but intimidated
sure.
by the process to be a police officer, and we helped take that away. Yep. All right, so that's that. So, Josh, if anyone wants to listen to this wonderful, wonderful podcast, where can they find it?
Yeah, we are on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify. We're on Google Play and Alexa. So however you, whatever platform, whatever yep. app you're using, we are probably there.
We're
larger than life nationwide.
Ubiquitous.
I like that. Yeah, that's a good word.
Yeah. yep. Also, social media. I am trying to get us really active on social media. I've started quite a bit of a following on Instagram lately. I find that people like police memes.
Yeah.
So it's fun. I'm having a good time with it. But you can follow us on Twitter. That's at GSPCC1. Facebook, we are facebook.com/GSPCC1. Instagram, it's instagram.com/GSPCC. Also, we put out a monthly newsletter. If you would like to receive it, just go to our website, top right-hand corner. You'll see how to sign up. It's that easy. We'd love to have you. All right. That's it, man. I'm out of breath. I'm done.
Me too.
All right. For everyone, please be safe. And, hey, you know, do something to help brighten someone else's day for a change.